is The Black Box. Emergency response executive Ken Jenkins draws from his years of experience in deployment, logistics, planning, and after-action analysis to take you inside The Black Box. Now, here's Ken Jenkins.
Welcome to The Black Box. I'm Ken Jenkins, President and CEO of Ken Jenkins, LLC, professional emergency response consultant. My background in emergency response is 30 years plus in aviation, working for three major carriers, longest of which 26 years with American Airlines. And during my tenure there, I was the manager of emergency response and our care program for the last 7-8 years I was with American. During my time at American Airlines from 1982 through 2008, we responded to an unfortunate 8 fatal accidents from 1994 to 2004. My goal through this podcast series is to introduce you to the world of emergency response and the various components, and as the black box helps investigators determine what caused an accident, looking at the aftermath of a disaster from a humanitarian side now, and looking at what we can do to improve things and make things better for everyone in the aftermath of such a disaster. Today, our focus is going to be on accident investigation. And in looking at how we could best do this, I brought in who I consider the resident expert on commercial aircraft accident investigation, a friend and someone I'm proud to call my mentor, Mr. Tommy McFall. Tommy, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Tommy has a vast experience. I'm going to let him explain his previous history. He's a former Navy guy. Don't hold that against him. He's also a former commercial pilot and NTSB investigator and also an investigator for the airline. So, Tommy, share with everyone some of your background, please.
Well, as you say, I started in the Navy in 1970. I spent 7 years as a Navy pilot. After that, I went to Braniff Airways, a little airline that many of your people in your audience will remember, the older ones. After Braniff declared bankruptcy, I was fortunate enough to get a position with the NTSB. After working through some freight outfits and corporate flying, did find my way to the safety board and worked for the NTSB for 11 years. And then American Airlines gave me another opportunity, and I went to American Airlines from the NTSB to work there as a managing director of safety and managing director of accident investigation for 8 years.
So with all that experience, I asked Tommy to come in today and to talk with us about accident investigation, not only from the National Transportation Safety Board's perspective, the NTSB, but also from a commercial air carrier's perspective. You know, Tommy, when an accident occurs, even general aviation, business aviation, or commercial aircraft, it is front page news. It's always on the media. There's something about seeing the wreckage on TV that really ties into people's emotions. Tell us what it's like being an investigator, what you're looking for, how you're looking for it. Walk us through the steps and the processes.
Well, the process is the same, basically, fundamentally, no matter how big the aircraft is, whether it's a mid-air collision, in-flight breakup, weather-related, the process of investigation is fundamentally the same, and all investigators are taught that. It's basically looking at all the various factors and to go into the investigation with an open mind and look at and eliminate everything you possibly can so that at the end of the day, you have come up with what is most probably what happened. And that's what the NTSB calls their probable cause.
So when the safety board, the NTSB, comes on scene, explain the role of the IIC, the investigator in charge, and the various other players from the safety board that might accompany the IIC. What are the various groups? How does that all work?
In a major accident, which I think this discussion is assuming, and a major accident meaning an air carrier type event, perhaps a corporate jet, where there are a number of occupants, high visibility in the media, that the NTSB or its equivalent anywhere in the world will put together various teams, and there could be one team or could be, there's no limit to how many teams there could be. They'll be in areas like operations, human factors, weather, air traffic control, survival factors, anything you can think of, meteorology, I think I mentioned that already. Mm-hmm. Each one of those will have a what's called a group chairman from the NTSB or its equivalent in other parts of the world. And then that person will be what's called the group chairman, and they'll run that group, and that group will be then populated by people who are parties to the investigation. So if in the case of an airline accident, there'll be parties would be typically the aircraft manufacturer, the airline itself, unions for the various employee working groups. The FAA is always a party. So those people would then populate this group, and they would investigate that section of the investigation. And then that group chairman puts together a report, submits that to the IIC. So the IIC has a number of NTSB employees that are basically doing his investigative work in their various areas. So if an accident happens on an ice clear day, the meteorology group is probably going to have pretty fast work. This is called the black box. There's a group for the cockpit voice recorder and a group for the digital flight data recorder. Uh-huh. And their job would be to analyze those two recorders and put that in a form that's meaningful to the IIC and the rest of the teams. So that's kind of the basic organization of the NTSB's major investigation. If it was a minor accident, not a minor accident, a smaller accident with just a general aviation involvement, then the IIC might be the only person there from the NTSB. So he wouldn't really have all those formal groups. So the NTSB doesn't launch all these formal groups in every investigation, but they do so in every major accident.
So it depends on the situation, size and scope
right.
of the event.
The safety board has the ability to scale it up or down as they see fit.
So let's talk about a major disaster. So a mass fatality accident, such as whether it was like an Asiana 214, for example, which was in San Francisco a few years ago, American Flight 587, which was shortly after 9/11 back in 2001. What is the length of time? Because, you know, family members in the aftermath of a disaster, they want information as quickly as possible. But an accident investigation isn't a quick process. So what's the on-scene response time for a major commercial accident typically? And then the on-scene time versus once you leave to get that probable cause report completed?
The report itself can take, typically they will, the NTSB will say a year is their kind of baseline. So it could be more than that, could be far more than that. But typically you're not going to see anything earlier than that. Now, the safety board does try to keep family members informed. They have their family meetings, and they have communication with the families. And I have been part of a family meeting, so I have seen how they disseminate that information. And it's certainly a step forward from what it used to be before the Family Assistance Act, as far as families getting information. But I suppose there will always be a vacuum between what the families would like to have and what is available to them, because you just can't release information before you know it's factual.
Okay, and we're going to talk more about that information, what families want, and the timing of that. But I want to talk more after the break about a particular accident and then have you walk us through the process of what was going on and what your actual experience was like. We'll talk about Flight 965 when we come back.
Of the Black Box, coming up.
Digital destination for premium talk radio.
Hang on tight. You're listening to The Black Box on RNCM.
And welcome back to The Black Box. Our guest today is Tommy McFall. He's president and CEO of McFall & Associates. And today's topic is accident investigation in the aftermath of a commercial air disaster. Before the break, Tommy was giving us information about the NTSB investigative process, the National Transportation Safety Board. And Tommy, you've worked both sides of the fence. You've worked as an NTSB investigator, but also as chief of accident investigations for American Airlines, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So I'd like you to take a moment and go back to December 20th, 1995. And it was a few days before Christmas, and American Flight 965 on a Boeing 757 on its way to Cali, Columbia, crashed in the mountains. Share with us some of the structural differences you saw and experienced in Cali with regards to that response. What was different than an NTSB investigation and what you saw in Cali? Walk us through that.
Cali was arguably the most unusual investigation that I have ever participated in. And one of the reasons that made it so odd was the absence of that structure that I talked about in the previous segment, with all those groups and everybody in the NTSB arriving and having the organizational meetings and just guiding the investigation. That was simply not there in Cali initially. The NTSB did respond, but it took them a few days to get there because my recollection was that because the accident was in the guerrilla-held territory in Colombia, that apparently there were problems with the safety board getting travel authority, and I don't know anything else about that. All I know is they didn't show up for a couple of days, even though they tried. They wanted to be there.
I understand the NTSB did arrive, but we should even take a step back from that, and that everyone may not know the NTSB isn't the responder to all aviation accidents around the world, only within the United States. So how is it they would even come to Colombia to respond? Do they have to be invited? How did they become part of the investigative process?
There's an organization called the International Civil Aviation Organization. It's referred to as ICAO. ICAO has rules that address international accident investigations, and that provides for, for instance, in the case of American 965, the airline was from the United States. The airplane was manufactured in the United States. And either one of those would have given the United States the right to be an accredited representative and be invited to the accident by the Colombian government. So the Colombian government would have the primary responsibility to investigate and report on the accident, but they could invite the NTSB to participate under this ICAO Annex 13 ruling. So that was the role the NTSB was playing.
Okay.
And that's a typical way you would react to an accident.
So I want everyone to know that it's not as simple as there's an accident and the NTSB goes. There are some protocols, particularly internationally, that have to be followed.
Right.
But you mentioned
that. And there's communications between the governments.
The two governments ahead of time.
So there's no surprises, right? The Colombians asked them, and they knew they were coming. It just took them a little while to get there.
It took several days to get there.
Well, the fact that it was in the Andes at a pretty high elevation in guerrilla-controlled territory made it a whole different animal.
So what was happening in those few days? I'm assuming that people weren't just sitting tight waiting for the NTSB to arrive. What was happening before the board arrived? You were there. How quickly did you arrive on scene?
American put together a 757, and we were there basically at sunrise. So the accident happened around midnight, and we got a team in the air very quickly.
So you were there very quickly. So what was it like? How were you able to get to the site and access the site? So it was in the mountains, so it's not like you can land there and do this. So walk us through, paint that picture for us.
We initially took cars and drove up into the Andes, which is sort of a story in itself about how that all evolved, but I'll just make it the cliff notes and tell you that we took our just vehicles. We hired drivers who were locals, and we went up to a little town called Buga, and Buga had a small army base, and this base, it appeared to be primarily a drug control base to deal with the guerrillas and such in the areas. So we staged out of there, and then helicopters took us from the army base in Buga up to as high as they could get us, which is where they had an army base camp, had several hundred soldiers that were camped up there primarily for security of the family and the investigative groups. So then we did walk on up from there. So from the time you got to the helicopter ride, it was the walk is another 6 hours or so to get to the wreckage.
So we're talking a large amount of time just to get to the actual site.
Right, a full day by the time you go up and come back down, and we didn't want any of our people spending the night up there. So you didn't have that much time on the scene by the time you did all your work to get there and allowed yourself enough time to get back down before dark, because the helicopters wouldn't fly at night.
In the United States, I know an accident scene is, for lack of a better term, cordoned off, if you will, or made secure by the National Transportation Safety Board and folks that help them secure the scene. That's not the case in 965. I remember hearing stories, and I'd like you to share with everyone, that there were looters that climbed the mountain, family members that went up in search of their loved ones on the plane.
I recall vividly when I landed there the first time in the helicopter, seeing all these lots of people, dozens of people, and they were not soldiers. They were just people going up these little trails up this mountain, and they were steep. It was a steep incline, and it was muddy because it rained every day. And these people were going up there in droves, literally looking for their next of kin. They were opening body bags to see who was in there, to see if it was their people. There were looters that were taking virtually anything that had any value, pieces of the airplane, passports, anything. So, and then there was a few media people who had made the trip up. So there was no real control. If you were healthy enough and strong enough to make the trip, you pretty much got to go.
From the on-scene perspective for 965, what was the length of on-site activity for the Colombian Accident Investigative Team, the NTSB, and collectively the American Airlines Investigative Team? How long were you guys on scene there at that accident site?
The Colombian team actually never came to the site. I never saw them. The NTSB was there until, I believe, Christmas Eve. Because they weren't there for the Christmas dinner, right? That's how I remember that they were gone by then. And of course, once the NTSB came down, the Army came down. Once the Army came down, we came down. So the on-site activities only lasted a few days.
So only 4 or 5 days in that particular case.
Yeah.
So I know that there were some challenges with regards to the looters and the folks that were on the hillside or up on the mountainside with you. When we come back from the break, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that and talk about the humanitarian aspect. Because while the investigative team was doing your work, the humanitarian side, the care team, was also doing theirs. More about that when we come back from the break.
Buckle up. More of the Black Box is next on RNCN.
You're listening to RNCN, the number one source for premium talk radio.
You're tuned in to The Black Box with Ken Jenkins on RNCN.
And welcome back. Our special guest today is Tommy McFall, former investigator, accident investigator with the National Transportation Safety Board, and also the chief accident investigator for American Airlines. We're talking about American Airlines Flight 965, which crashed on December 20th, 1995. 159 souls were lost. There were 4 survivors and a dog in the cargo hold. And Tommy, before the break, we were talking about the actual site, the accident site, and what it was like, and the differences between how an accident is structured, a response is structured in the United States versus foreign soil. One of the things I want to talk about with regards to that structure was the humanitarian side of the response. Because I know from an accident investigator standpoint, it's very technical. You're looking at it's so many thousands of different aspects, but now you throw the human side into it. What were some of the challenges and situations you faced with regards to the humanitarian response?
In my experience at the NTSB, I had very little exposure to family members. Occasionally on the smaller general aviation accidents, you'd be out and you'd interview a next of kin just to get background information or history of something, or try to find some logbooks, that sort of thing. But it certainly wasn't follow-up and in-depth. At American, all of a sudden, at the Cali accident, we were just overwhelmed with the humanitarian issues that were largely out of our control. It was near the holidays. The people were arriving at the morgue people were in horse-drawn wagons. There were people with vehicles with empty coffins tied to the top of them. They wanted the remains of these people. And we were trying as hard as we could to accommodate that, but between the identification process and the FBI was there, and they had their concerns, and American had we really didn't have anything to do with that process. We were just trying to facilitate it. And then the Colombian government was doing what they had to do to fulfill their obligation. So there was just an awful lot going on. So long story made short, the people, the next of kin and family, were getting very impatient about releasing the bodies. And so emotions were extremely high. We were also climbing the mountain, as I said earlier, with these family members. So everywhere you went, you were seeing family members going through the grieving process of trying to find their loved ones, and there was no escaping the family, you know, in a sort of a sterile environment of the NTSB's investigation, and the scene itself is very secure. I mean, there's not even very many airline people get access to it. Only the people who really have to be there get to go to the site.
Sure.
Even in my role as the guy kind of leading the American charge, I didn't get to go to the site because I wasn't on any of the teams. So they control it. But in this case, there was no control. So the you just couldn't escape the emotion. And that was a brand new thing for me, a new challenge that was went far beyond the technical piece of it.
And on the other side of this response, and for everyone's understanding, American had at that point in 1995 an established care team or customer assistance relief effort. And there were care team members on site, not the accident site, but on scene in Colombia to work with the families. We had American had opened up a call center to field calls from family members and were talking to family members. But this was a different accident in that because there was no structure around the coordination of the scene and cordoning off the scene. You had accident investigators maybe alongside looters and family members on the mountainside. Is that right?
Absolutely. And you couldn't separate. It was impossible.
Everybody was there together.
Yeah, there was no segregating anybody.
And with it being so close to Christmas, did that create an additional challenge, or did that create the impatience of folks that they understood that there were many fatalities, and because it was near Christmas, they wanted to bury their loved one? Was that part of the reason that this got somewhat challenging?
I honestly don't know if it was they actually wanted to physically to have the burial and the funerals, or if they just simply wanted their loved one back so they could start that process. I don't know. The exact reason. What I do know is that I was overwhelmed with the people that just had it. Mm-hmm. They wanted progress. They wanted to move along. And we wanted to as well. Everybody involved wanted to give them what they wanted, but the process just wouldn't move that fast.
So this was 1995. This is a full year before, in the United States, the Aviation Disaster Family Assistance Act of 1996 was passed. And for those that are interested in that act and what the act provides in terms of structure, for lack of a better term, the act is found, you can find it at the NTSB site at www.ntsb.gov and look for the Aviation Disaster Family Assistance Act of 1996. One of the things the act provides within the United States are briefings to families in a mass casualty event. Were there briefings like that on the Colombian side of things in 1995? Were they briefing families about what was going on the mountain and the repatriation of remains? Were there any informational sessions given to family members on behalf of the Colombian government while you were there?
I never saw anything like that at all. I saw a lot of family members everywhere we went. They were even in our hotel with us. But I never saw any government official trying to do any kind of briefings, no.
And from the identification standpoint, that temporary morgue facility, I think another one of the challenges that I remember hearing about, and please confirm or deny if this actually happened, that family members were actually escorted into the temporary morgue facility to positively identify their loved one?
That's correct. Yeah. So there were a lot of activities in that little morgue that were performed, and it was a very unpleasant place, to say the least.
So very different than something that would happen in the United States, where the coroner or the medical examiner, or in a mass casualty event, the disaster mortuary response team would come in and do that in a very compassionate, the notification that is, an empathetic way. We didn't have that kind of situation or structure.
No, and keep in mind, we're in the middle of nowhere. We're in the Andes. So I think the Colombian officials who were responsible truly did the best they could do, but considering where we were and the number of people that were involved, it was simply
it's very different.
The best they could do. So as I say these things, I'm not critical of the Colombian officials, because I think they did everything possible. It was just an impossible situation.
So what advice, based on what you experienced in 965 in 30 to 60 seconds, what would you share with folks if you have a disaster for your company, airline or otherwise, in the off U.S. territory? What would you share with them as advice, things to consider?
It would be similar advice to anybody who asked me a question about anything to do with emergency response. And I recall when you and I did training, we would tell people, you need a plan and you need to practice your plan. And then, as contradictory as it might sound, we would say, but it's not going to work. Your plan won't work. Parts of it will, but the whole thing won't. But you've got to have a plan so you can just get started. Well, in Colombia, there was no plan that would work. We had a plan, but it was based on certain assumptions about structure and that sort of thing. And we didn't have it's like building a house without the concrete foundation. You put it on the beach. Well, it's probably not going to stay there very long. We walked into Colombia used to the way we do business at the NTSB, or even in another country with a similar organization like the NTSB, at DFW Airport, that sort of thing. It wasn't there. We were really just shooting from the hip and going on the fly as we went. Every day was a new day.
Well, one of the things I like to say is priorities, not procedures. And sometimes, you know, having the right priorities and identifying your priorities are key, and let the procedures fall in place. That gives you the flexibility then to adapt your plan to the circumstances you have at hand. It sounds like you did that very well in Flight 965.
The better your training, the better your plan, the better you'll react if none of that works.
Great. Tommy, thank you very much for your insight and for sharing your experiences with everyone today. I appreciate you having on The Black Box.
For more information on The Black Box with Ken Jenkins, visit us online at kenjenkinsllc.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter.